I don't know what to think anymore. I just know that I can get 5 miles out of 5 double stuffed Oreos.
Welcome to the Hunt Back Country podcast, presented by Exo Mountain Gear. This podcast and the gear that we produce at Exo Mountain Gear share the same purpose: to make you a more capable, confident, and successful backcountry hunter. Straight to the point, no fluff, and no BS, this show is all about providing you with valuable information from experienced hunters. To learn more about the podcast or about our backcountry hunting packs, please visit exomountaingear.com. Welcome to episode 107. The guest tonight is our buddy Emery from Byland. Emery had quite the interesting season. He didn't get to hunt this past fall, but it's for good reason. He was out spending time in the wilderness, putting more miles on the trail, and seeing more time in a tent under the stars than you and I will in most seasons, and maybe for some of us in our life. Emery thru-hiked the PCT, the Pacific Crest Trail, which meant thousands of miles, meant many dozens of nights over several months, and you get to hear about it. So we love to talk about what lessons we learn as hunters, or what lessons we learn from any adventure. And certainly we can learn from Emery. As somebody who spent hundreds and hundreds of miles on the trail, what gear worked, what didn't? What nutrition worked, what didn't? What routines worked, and what didn't? What did he learn that he truly needed, and what did he learn that was just extra? So there's so much information, so much to be learned from somebody who has spent this much time outside in the wild in one season. Can't wait to bring it to you guys. Before we dive into the show, want to say thank you. Just in the last episode, we launched the Backcountry Hunting Training Program with our friends from Atomic Athlete, and the response has been great. Once again, this is just a free program for you guys, just to help you out, just to physically and mentally prepare for the demands of backcountry hunting. To learn more about it and download the program 100% free, go to exomountaingear.com/train, T-R-A-I-N. Once again, can't thank the guys at Atomic Athlete enough for helping us make this happen for you guys. If you have any questions, having any troubles getting that download, anything like that, just shoot us an email. podcast@exomountaingear.com, and we will get you taken care of right away. All right, let's dive into the show with Emery and his experience hiking the Pacific Crest Trail. Emery, welcome to the Hunt Back Country podcast. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Steve, how you doing tonight, bud?
Fantastic. Looking forward to listen to Emery tell stories of his hike this summer.
Yeah, it's the role reversal here, because you were just actually on Emery's podcast not too long ago, which I guess that's a good place to start, Emery. Just for context with listeners, tell us about Byland, the website, now the podcast, how you got started, why you got started, all that good stuff.
All right. Well, I created a website called Byland, byland.co. And then most recently started a podcast, and it kind of just got started with helping people have a better experience. I kind of struggled getting into backpacking and getting into hunting, and I didn't really grow up in a big family or had a ton of friends that were doing the kind of thing. So it was all trial and error, and mostly error. And I was like, you know what? I have learned some things. It may benefit some others. And if they want to read or listen, great. But here's kind of what I've learned, and it's been great. I've learned, it's pushed me to do even more and try new things and then report back. And it's just been fun to create the content and write. I've learned to love writing even more. And then the podcast recently, that was a new adventure. And that's just kind of picking the brains of other people, trying to figure out how they are successful, whether backpacking or hunting. It kind of revolves around backpacking mostly, but both backpacking and hunting, and just kind of being outdoors in general, and how to have a better time so you can focus on actually having the experience versus struggling with the gear and the unknowns. So yeah,
that's cool.
Did you personally go through, like, you know, some rough times on your first backpacking trips, or were you able to start off fairly educated?
No, I wanted to toss my backpack off a cliff on one of my big. I remember hiking to the truck and my body was seizing. I do this hike around Mount St. Helens every year around Memorial Day weekend. And the first time I did it, I went with a guy that was in really good shape. We did like 32 or 33 miles in 2 days, and I did not know what I was doing. And my body was locking up on itself. I wasn't feeding my body. My feet were hurting. I was miserable. And it was the last 3 miles into the trailhead. I had to keep moving. My body was just locking up. I couldn't sit down anymore. So, a horrible experience. But then the next year, you know, it got better and better. And that's kind of like the background of where I come from. And then now, you know, to talk about this hike, I'm like, wow, that's crazy. In just a few years, I've come so far. So,
yeah, it's always funny how the first backpacking story for like the first big adventure for pretty much everybody sucks. Yet it's immediately I can't wait to do that again. You know, like I really think at some level there's just a certain type of person, right? Because if most people, I don't say most, but many people would endure that and just absolutely give up. Yeah. But I think your story, my story, Steve, even your story, I mean, it's the first trips were just, you know, clusters. But it, in spite of that, it's like you know that there's something to it and you want to keep pushing and figure this thing out.
Well, and when I take now, you know, if I find someone that's interested in hunting or we'll say backpacking, if I find someone that's interested in backpacking and has never done it before, now what I do is I can control the environment and I can be like, okay, let me show you this. Let's go have a good time so that when it sucks, it's not as bad. So you can kind of work up to the pushing yourself versus like go right into the terrible mistakes, and I can kind of control the environment, and it's been really great to kind of show people the right way to do it versus the way that I did it and pushing myself too hard too fast.
Were you a backpacker that started hunting, a hunter that started backpacking, or do those two kind of streams develop together and intertwine kind of naturally?
I think it kind of happened at the same time. I was hunting, I was not satisfied with where I was hunting, and I wasn't backpacking. But I kind of always wanted to get a little bit further back and away from crowds and kind of go on these adventures that I couldn't get just in like a day hike. And so I was like, oh, cool, backpacking. That'll help me hunting, and hunting, that might help me backpacking. So it kind of happened. The roads to merged kind of at the same time. And I was like, that backpack hunting thing is kind of cool. And I kind of get a backpack adventure in and hunting, and that sounds great. So it kind of merged at the same time. And they cross a lot of paths together. So it's really great.
Yeah. So with those paths crossing, one thing we want to talk about is an adventure that you completed this past year is on the hiking side, on the backpacking side, and we're going to tie that into hunting for sure. Yeah. But tell us about the PCT, the Pacific Crest Trail, that this really huge endeavor that you set off on. First of all, just tell us what it is before you even get into how you got to start and all that. What is the PCT?
So the Pacific Crest Trail is a trail that extends from Mexico to Canada along through California, Oregon, and Washington. It's 2,650 miles, give or take a few when they adjust the trail each year due to washouts or whatever. You start like an hour outside the southern terminus. If you're going northbound, is like an hour outside San Diego, California. And the idea of these long-distance trails is you're through hiking. And if you kind of start defining it, it's completing it in one season. I think the PCT organization says like in a year or so like that, but through hikers usually start and stop in one season and they go from Mexico to Canada or Canada to Mexico, depending on when you kick off. So it's, yeah, just one solid trail that goes north to south.
Yeah. It's crazy. I don't want to totally geek out and waste our time getting into super nitty gritty because there's a lot of lessons on this side of the story that I want to talk about. But going into this, what goes into the decision of going north to south or south to north?
It depends on your availability. You know, you start going south to north roughly around April, May, late March, April, and May. Most of them in April, and then you end around September timeframe. You got to beat the snow, but you can't go too early. And then the southbounders, you know, they start around July and then end later in the year, you know, a few months later. So It usually takes, depending on the hiker, it takes 4 to 6 months. I met a guy that did it in 100 days. So divide that. That's ridiculous. Yeah.
You said it was 2,600 miles. So he's averaging 26 miles a day.
Yeah.
And marathon a day. But it's all paved and flat, right?
Totally. Yeah. Oregon is slightly flat. But I mean, it's just pounding on your body for that many miles and days on end. It's and everyone has a different pace. Yeah, there's records. And when you start really looking at the thru-hiking community, oh man, they start doing timed stuff and unsupported, and it gets really nitty. It's pretty, you can nerd out pretty quick.
Yeah. What would you say an average day is for kind of an average person not out there trying to break a record?
Depending on the beginning and end of the trail, but I would say if you're in shape and you've been doing it for a little while, I would say 20 to 25 miles a day is a good pace.
With off days in between, like 7 days of doing that and then take a day or two of rest, or?
Yeah, the idea is to not rest too long so that you don't get out of it and upstairs in your head. But yeah, you definitely need 0 days. We call them 0 days where you do 0 miles. You either do zeros or neros where they're almost a 0 day. And neros are just as almost just as good as a 0 day, depending on your shape. How good a shape you're in. Like at the end of the trail, a Nero might be 10 miles for me, whereas a Nero at the beginning might be like a mile or two.
Yeah.
Right.
Dude, it's so funny because, I mean, I've never done a thru hike, but I've followed some guys who have, kind of seen some videos, along the way of doing gear research and things on that. I've read gear reports from through hikers, and so I know it's like this whole subculture. I mean, you're ready to get into the lingo, right, of like zeros and neros. And was that all new to you before the hike, or had you kind of taken that dive and kind of knew what you're getting into in terms of the subculture, the lingo, all that?
Well, like, you know, you research a new culture that you're not a part of, and you're like, okay, I know that's how they refer to things, but you're not part of it, so you never refer, you don't use the lingo yet. And then once you're into it, you're like, you just, there's a moment to where you just become this thing, and that's your lingo now. And yeah, it's really weird. I knew about it, but you don't own it until you're actually doing it. So
yeah. So is it common on the PCT side, like it is on the Appalachian Trail, the AT side, to do trail names and all that?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So what's your trail name?
They called me Pooperazzi. that's paparazzi with a poop at the beginning.
Please explain.
Well, you take 100 pictures of beautiful landscapes, and then you grab one photo of your guy, of your friend, in a unique position in the woods, and then the next thing you know, there was multiple instances of me coming upon my friends going to the restroom, taking care of business, and then pretty soon, next thing you know, they're like, oh, okay, Pooperazzi. And I'm like, please no. And then like maybe up in Oregon, Washington, the smiles on people's faces when I said Pooperazzi, it was people would be like, oh, you're Pooperazzi? And they're like, okay, I'll be aware not to, go around you. And I'm like, come on, I'm not a weirdo. Like,
that's so funny.
But at least it's no like, tree frog or tree angel.
Yeah, right. What is the longest hike you had done before embarking on the PCT?
Roughly around 35 miles. It was that the longest one would be around Mount St. Helens in one shot. So yeah, that was quite daunting thinking of doing that numerous times in a row.
Right. 35 to 2,600. Slight leap.
A slight leap, yeah.
Yeah. Did you prepare much physically, or do you let the endeavor sort of get you into shape?
Going into it, I kind of wanted to get ready, but at the same time, my mind was like, I don't think this is going to be nice anyhow. I mean, I'd have to be hiking 25 miles a day to be in shape. And so I kind of let the endeavor, I kind of took care of my body. We started out at 15 miles a day for the first month and kind of eased into it. And then you slowly work up to the higher miles. That's probably the smarter way to do it versus people that just hit the ground running. And then, it's, if you're a long distance runner or you're a marathon guy or cyclist, that it's a long journey and you need to get from beginning to end. So you need to pace yourself. So I kind of decided I would just let the trail take care of it. And I would lift weights and do weight training and kind of go on some weighted hikes, but not overdo it to where I was going to injure myself, and kind of let the trail take care of it.
One of the most fascinating aspects about a trip like this to me is just the logistics. So before we dive into the actual experience of the hike, I just want to touch on it a little bit. Obviously, when you're out there for 4 to 6 months, you're not starting with everything you need. So talk us through the logistics in terms of being able to hit supply points, being able to do prepared drop-offs, kind of all the logistics mm-hmm. of food and gear and just refreshing things that you need when you're on the trail for months at a time.
So great question. There's two methods. One is you might see thru-hikers create these boxes they send themselves. They do resupply boxes and they have someone send them to them when they get to a certain town. And normally these known long distance trails, the trail town, we call them trail towns. They know who hikers are and there's a hiker season. And so you might see stacks and stacks of these boxes. Well, there's pros and cons to that. And then there's the other situation or theory or style is self resupply. And that is when you get to town, you go about resupplying yourself and with whatever's in that town. There's pros and cons to both. I kind of did a mixture of both. I had some boxes back here and some people sending some gear and or food that I couldn't get just to kind of supplement my diet or whatever I needed. But most of the time what I found was I could resupply at a gas station. I could resupply at a small market. Walmart's became terrible to go to because it was just too much. and the packaging was too big. So gas stations, quick marts, you know, stuff like that, that became easy. We could go down to the corner of gas station. We could go backpack for a week. You know, it'd be really easy for me at this point. So kind of a mixture of both, but that's how people do it. They have drop points and they pick up gear. But usually if I needed new shoes, I went through 6 pairs of shoes. If I needed new shoes, I would have them sent or I would go to a local store and grab what I needed.
So at a gas station, you could find the right types of food to be eating for that. I would think just your nutrition would be fairly terrible. Critical.
Pop-Tarts, yeah. Man. All I need is Pop-Tarts.
Well, so we can get into that. It's disgusting what I was eating and it doesn't make any, it doesn't make any sense from a nutrition standpoint. I lost 20 pounds eating pastries, Pop-Tarts, easy cheese and Mountain House meals. And I played with my diet from beginning to end, trying new things. I'm fairly healthy dude. Like I eat healthy things, you know, shakes in the morning, that kind of thing. I lift. So I know what should be going in my body. And then I'm looking at what I'm actually putting in my body. And have you guys ever had that bonk, where you just go sugar low and you're like, oh no.
Yeah. Yep. Oh yeah.
So I was struggling with that a lot in the beginning because I wasn't preloading my body or feeding it these right things. I wasn't keeping on top of it. And by the time I hit the Washington border, my diet, I'll just go ahead and say it. My morning, it was coffee and a packaged like donut and then like a cinnamon roll or something like that. And then it was double stuffed Oreos until about 10. Then it was like a Pop-Tart. And then it was wrap. It was like a tortilla with easy cheese and salami. And then it was Oreos the rest of the day until a Mountain House meal or top ramen at night.
Dude, how awesome to eat like a fourth grader again.
And here's the crazy part. So those listening might be like, that's terrible for you. And I would agree with you. That is awful. But I never had one bonking session all through Washington. I was covering the highest miles I was doing on the trail, 25 to 30 miles a day, every day. I was no longer doing zeros. I was doing neros. So very few miles going into town, resting for the afternoon and then going back out. Never once did I run out of energy. I would wake up refreshed. So this doesn't make any sense. My body was changing though. So there's a lot of dynamic in that. And it's just a strange thing. So I don't know what to think anymore. I just know that I can get 5 miles out of 5 double stuffed Oreos.
That's funny. I mean,
yeah. Did you have a calorie per mile type ratio that you were, I mean, were you counting that?
I kind of had a general idea of 500, you know, I'd hike for 2 hours, which was, you know, 5 to 6 miles, and then 500 calories and okay. as much water as I could drink. But you know, that's hard to do. You never know how many miles you're going to do, but I mean, start counting up the calories in a double stuffed Oreo and you get to 500 real quick.
Yeah.
So almost 100 calories a mile that you're needing.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yep. Huh. And everyone's different, you know.
Right.
What works for me might not work for you.
Right. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Just
loves donuts.
Right. And I think it'd be one thing to start your trip like that, but as you mentioned, especially doing that later into the trip, I mean, your body has, you're essentially a furnace. I mean, you're just burning through calories because the demand on your body just day after day after day. I mean, there's probably nothing that you couldn't burn at that point.
Yeah. And you know, you got to think like access to really healthy food is it's not there.
Oh yeah.
So you're kind of forced into this. It's, you might judge through hikers, through, you know, nutritionists might be like, oh, that's terrible for you. But like, dude, at the end of the day, I don't have access to what you have access to. And I just have to get on the trail and go. So it's weird. It worked. I don't know how to make heads or tails of it. But
Well, I mean, it can be difficult to put a week together and have like a super clean, healthy, you know, meal plan, you know, each day, just a week. So, I mean, doing that, you know, over and over again, it's just not possible, not sustainable, not unless you have, you know, millions of dollars to spare and can coordinate all those pre-drops. Because certainly if you want to eat clean, you can't be refueling for a week at a gas station like you did.
Yeah. And someone brought up the other day about inflammation, like, you know, sugars might inflame your joints and cause issues, right? But here's the thing. When I'm covering that many miles for that many weeks and months and days on end, I don't know what's what. Like, I don't know what's causing the inflammation because I just know that I felt like I was 80 years old all the time. And I don't know if my diet
was it the sugar or the 30 miles. Yeah.
Like, I don't know which one that would be. So
that was one question I had was there just like for me every year we do the death hike. I always have like my left knee for some point, whether it's one mile or 10 miles, just feels like it's going to blow up. Did you have days like that where, you know, you were just in a lot of pain?
It actually almost took me off the trail at one point. My left knee, I was going through Lassen National Monument, and my left knee just decided, like maybe 3 miles before we were done for the day, walking over snow, it decided to just start hating me, and it was actually buckling on me. And it was the closest I'd ever gotten to like, okay, I might shed some tears here because it's in so much pain. And my buddy he's a medic, corpsman, Navy corpsman. And he was like, buddy, he's like, oh man, I'm so sorry, man. So, you know, you stay on top of ibuprofen, keep the inflammation down. I lived on ibuprofen, 3 in the morning, 3 at night, and 3 during the, you know, middle of the day. It's terrible for you again, but it kept, as long as I kept that ibuprofen, that inflammation down, or whatever works for you for inflammation, that really, really helps. And through when I almost got off the trail at Crater Lake, because my knee, anytime the terrain would change, my left knee, same thing, just that ping and that something was off in there. It was swelling, you know, overuse injury maybe. Mm-hmm. I started loading up on ibuprofen, and from Crater Lake to Canada, never had once I kept it in my body and kept on it, never once had a problem with my left knee.
Interesting.
Yeah. Inflammation is a terrible thing.
Yeah, usually for me, I think it's my IT band that just gets so tight that's just pulling up on my kneecap.
I have really tight legs on the outside, and every masseuse will be like, man, you are super tight out there. I'm like, yep. So you got to stretch them out, make sure that at the end of the day, you're moving and stretching throughout the day for sure. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that you lost 20 pounds throughout this, and knowing you, seeing some photos a little bit, I don't think you had 20 pounds to lose. I had 20 pounds to lose. Yeah. What was that like? Have you recovered that weight now? Has it stayed off? I mean, despite all the Oreos, losing 20 pounds is significant.
It's crazy. Yeah. I started at 160. I was I'm not a very big dude, very lean. And when I got to Canada, I spent one night in Canada, and then we came back down, and I weighed myself. I was at 140, and I know for a fact, you know, going into Manning Park, the town right inside the border, I had to have been, you know, because I loaded up with pizza that night, and you know, I was just like carb load, and I'm sure I was under 140 when I came off that day. So I've kept it back. You know, my body usually fluctuates very little, you know, but I'm usually between 155, 160, and I'm back there. It doesn't take long, but you're pretty much super ripped by the time you're done with that thing.
Wow. Wow. Total beast.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that there wasn't always a typical, but kind of walk us through a typical day. What time did you get up? Did you get on the trail right away? Did you start with breakfast in camp? Like, just kind of walk us through an average day, I guess.
Well, everyone has a routine that works for them. And I think one of the main things about whether you're hunting or you're backpacking, getting into a routine is a really good thing because you can rely on it. So my routine, I let my body sleep until it was ready to wake up. In the desert, that was about 5 a.m. It just naturally woke up. When I started doing higher miles, I woke up around 6. And then I was off. I would eat breakfast, have some coffee, and get on the trail no later than 7 in the morning. And then from there, it was every 2 hours, at a minimum every 2 hours, I was stopping, drinking water, hydrating, getting food in my stomach, getting off of my feet so that I could, because it was going to be an all-day affair. So get off my feet, sit down, rest, and then hike another 2 hours, do the same thing, wash, rinse, repeat. And then lunch was between 30 minutes to an hour, depending on how much I needed. Sometimes I get a cat nap in if I needed it. And that could just be, don't you love those? You know, those forest naps you take when you're hunting, you're like, I just need like 5 minutes.
Oh yeah.
they're the best, right? They're just like a quick nap and then you're good to go for another 2 hours. And then dinner, you know, I was in camp. I think the latest I ever hiked maybe was 8:30, 9 o'clock during like the middle of the summer. But normally I like to be in camp 7 o'clock, you know, getting close to camp around 7:30 and in bed by 8 so I could get a good night's rest. And I was off my feet aired out, gear ready, eating dinner and done, laying horizontal.
Yeah, that's smart. Forcing those 2 hour breaks at the most.
Yeah. And you know, and I'd play by ear. If I was getting hungry, I would say, oh, you know, I'll stop on the hour and see where I'm going. And some days are worse than others, depending on the terrain. We just have to take it by ear. But every 2 hours, for sure, I was stopping.
Yeah. So we talked a bit about nutrition. I want to cover gear a bit as well. Not necessarily what did you bring A to Z, but just kind of what are some of the standouts? I know that things went sour really quick in terms of footwear for you, so I definitely want to hit that. But then also, just if we can, you know, look at it from this side of the trip and talk about, you know, what non-necessities did you discover along the way that maybe you packed, or maybe you packed super efficient, what little things were a lifesaver, just kind of all that kind of big debrief on gear.
So this we called it shoepocalypse. I started out, so through hikers wear trail runners. That's what they do. They don't. I talked to Steve about this. We don't wear through hikers don't wear Gore-Tex shoes. They wear just really lightweight, airy trail runners. And the trail runners I chose to start the hike in, they just were too flexible, and they put a ton of stress on my foot, and then they put these massive blisters on my ankles, and I started adjusting the way I was walking and then stressed the right side of my foot to the point where I was literally hobbling down the trail for a number of days. And it took a long time for my foot to heal. So I had to switch footwear to something that was a little more stiff to not let my foot work so much. That was a lesson learned. I did not know that going into it. But you, how are you going to know? Until you're covering tons of miles every day, you just don't know. When I walked around in the store, that's different. You know, you can't just walk up and down a set of stairs or walk around left or right for 20 feet and say, good to go. It's really, you never know till you get out there. So footwear was a big thing for me. I found out what worked for my foot and what didn't, and then how to manage blisters if I did get those. And then
to cut you off, but when things went wrong with your footwear, that you obviously put some forethought into and that didn't end up working out, how did you decide where to go from there? Like, you're on the trail, you'd need new footwear. How are you making the selection? Were you trying to pull up your phone and do some research? What did you think you needed? Like, how did that go? Cause I'm just curious. It would be, a little unnerving if I think about personal, like, yeah, this is what I chose. Definitely not working. Now I need to make a new decision, but I'm already out here. So how did you do that?
Well, there's I personally had some shoes on standby waiting at home that I called to say, ship them.
Oh, okay.
And in 3 days, within 1 week, I had my new shoes.
Perfect.
That I was supposed to start the trail with, but I just, for some reason, didn't.
So you essentially went to your plan B.
Yeah. Which should have been plan A. Yeah. But at the same time now, there are, when you come across like pro shops, you know, thru-hikers have the Ultra shoe, it's a zero drop shoe, is like king on the trail. It's a wide foot box. It's zero drop. That is what thru-hikers use all the time. I mean, every thru-hiker that's been doing it for a while, they all, for some reason, they're all wearing Ultras. But I was wearing Hokas, and they worked really well for me because I thought maybe they helped heal my foot. And I did try Ultras towards the end of the trail, and they could have worked, but I like the extra cushion in the Ultras or in the Hokas.
Mm-hmm.
So then, as far as, you know, moving up the trail, I kind of went into the hike thinking, gear wise, I know what I need because I've been backpacking. I've done this thing before. But as you make your way north, there's something really interesting that ends up happening. You end up, whether it's your comfort level or confidence level, you start seeing things in your backpack that you haven't been using. And they're mostly comfort items. They're like just in case. I kind of like to categorize things as I need this, I think I need it, and I want it. And I think when you dive into those things, they're very different. It's like, I need food. I need a shelter. You know, I need a water filter. I need those things. What those things might be different, but I definitely need them. I think I might need this extra pair of socks. Do I need them or do I think I need them? And then maybe that moves into like the I want category. I wanted this pillow to sleep with at the end of the day, and it was amazing. I have one of those Sea to Summit pillows that you just kind of blow up, super ultra light. Mm-hmm. It is a game changer.
Best 2 ounces ever.
Stayed with me the entire trail, loved it, and that was a want. It wasn't a need. You clearly don't need it, and it's not a need category, but it's a want. You know, you can find another way to make a pillow, but to me it was a want, and that was one of my few luxury items. But as you make your way north and you become more confident and more efficient with your gear and your body, I ended up ditching my pants and hiking in a pair of running shorts. And you start just shedding all this weight, and pretty soon your backpack gets smaller, and you just become more efficient at what you're doing. And you realize that, I guess I didn't need those pants. I just wanted them because they were comfortable. And I had a pair of, like, you know, Nike compression tights that if I was cold, I'd toss those on. But most of the time, man, I just kept moving. And that's different for hunters. Like, I understand, like, hunting is very unique in that you might be exerting yourself up a hill for a period of time and then stopping and freezing. So no one, you know, that's a different type of layering system that you need. But as a hiker, I learned, I'm like, okay, I need to get warm. I need to move. And luckily for me, I needed to cover ground anyhow. So you just start shedding the things that you haven't been using in your backpack. Everyone, at a minimum, whether you're hunting or backpacking, if you go on a trip, and I think you guys would agree, if you go on a trip and you don't use an item and you notice you haven't been using it, then you don't need it, most likely.
Yeah.
That's just how it is.
Absolutely.
Or maybe you pare it down. Like, my first aid kit that I started with at the beginning of the trail was much larger than what it was at the end. And first aid kits for me, I came from the military and knowing, like, okay, I need every scenario covered, but you can just engineer a solution to a massive cut or a break or something like that. You may not, like, my first aid kit looked like Band-Aids, ibuprofen, and some Leuco tape to cover blisters and cuts and stuff like that. And I would just keep it on there until I was at a place I could clean it. And that got me through, you know. Hunters, you know, you're kind of off trail, maybe a little different scenario, but first aid kit is a need, but maybe it doesn't need to be that big.
Hmm.
And that's up for debate, clearly.
Right. Well, I'm curious on your Hokas, would you wear those hunting in rugged country off trail, or do you switch to a boot?
That is a great question. I actually tried using a Hoka boot mid in this past elk season, and it tore my feet up. I think because of it's more for trail type hiking. When you're off trail and your foot's really moving around off, you know, you go over a fern or a rock, your ankle's really, really working. So I am now either in a really low profile trail runner or a boot to stabilize my foot, depending on the hunt I'm going to be doing.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Notice, ultras, they have those mids as well, I think, in their Lone Peak, and I've been tempted to give those a shot myself.
I think they'd be worth a shot. They're going to give you a ton of feel on the ground. But it's weird with a wide toe box, but it feels great.
Yeah, it's totally different. Yeah, totally different. So what are some of the standouts of things that worked well? Maybe it's the big ticket items, or maybe it's shelter or anything, but what? Maybe it's something small. But if you look back at it, it's like, man, I couldn't have done it. Like you kind of mentioned with your pillow. What are some of the great standouts for you?
My water filter, how I was filtering water, excuse me, Sawyer water filters, the Sawyer squeeze worked great. I would attach it to the top of a smart water bottle. So I'd have, whether it's a liter and a half or a liter or half a liter, whatever you want to choose, you just screw it to the top and it's incredibly efficient. I was doing the whole, when I needed to filter water, pull it out of a bag, attach it to a thing and then filter my water. But as I moved up the trail, I'm like, man, I don't have time for that. I just want to stop, pull my bottle out, fill it up, drink, refill it. And I would have a clean bottle and a dirty bottle. And that was my system. And I've seen gravity filters, but for me personally, I think my trail was enhanced by just the ease of bending over, picking up the water, filtering it right into my mouth like a sport cap and being done with it. Mm-hmm. My stove, I used a JetBoil, incredibly efficient with fuel. I think that I knew guys that were getting by with over a month's worth of cooking out of their JetBoil. And a tiny canister.
Out of one canister. Wow.
Out of one canister, yeah. I got nervous getting lighter. You know, I was like, I don't want to be that guy that runs out of fuel. So I would replace it early. But I had a guy hiking with me that he was almost on month two. And I'm like, dude, swap it. Like, that's terrifying.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when we did our stove test, JetBoil was by far the most efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, and then trekking poles. If no one's ever used trekking poles, those are big standouts. They really. I know trekking poles are kind of goofy looking, but once you feel the benefit of them, man, it's really hard to go back. If you're trying to carry a load or trying to move through the country now, if you're off trail, that's one thing, and you're hunting, you don't need your hands locked up. But if you're just trying to transit, man, they are just make your life a lot better.
Yeah. Absolutely. Couldn't agree with more. One thing I remember you mentioning when we talked previously on your podcast was the difference between, like, you could literally feel 2 pounds on your back, the difference of that towards the end of the hike. Can you kind of talk about that?
Yeah. So as you progress in higher miles or towards the end of your trip, we'll say, you can start feeling the difference between that pound or 2 pounds or 3 pounds that's in your backpack. And the way I equate it is, I could notice if I had a little extra weight in my bag, I might have to make camp earlier versus like pushing another 5 miles. It would allow me, the lighter I got, it would allow me to go further. And to think about in a hunting aspect, if you're not counting ounces, you might be getting tired earlier after, say, you go hunting for 5 days, maybe on day 3 to 5. Your body might be kind of worn out, and maybe you need to get up that ridge and into that drainage, and having that, counting those ounces might, you know, extend that distance you can make to go after a bull or a buck of a lifetime or something like that. Does that kind of answer the question?
Yeah, absolutely. I think kind of what I was getting at is, I think even at the beginning of the trip, you were probably not in good enough shape to notice the difference, but it was there. Yep. So I think it's really important for people to pay attention to that when they're loading up their pack for a backcountry trip. You know, like I said, I'm obviously on that super minimalist side, and I do that for a reason, because at the end of the day, I personally feel a huge difference between a 20-pound pack and a 25-pound pack. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's a really great point. Like, you might not feel it right away. And early on, I didn't feel it. But as you progress and as you get towards the end of your trip, you're like, okay, I can feel that. And so just, you know, go as light as you can, but be efficient and do what you're comfortable with, because it's going to pay off.
Yeah, the more I hear, there's so much opportunity out there in terms of learning, in terms of experience, by just doing. Like, we can listen to the podcast and have these conversations all you want, but man, you're in such a different position because you went out there. And so for me, it's like, man, it just makes me want to get out there even more. It makes me want to tell the listeners, like, you know, let's put away the phone, let's get out there, let's, instead of hearing these tips, like, go figure it out for yourself too, because there's just nothing like the experience of doing it. I mean, it's almost depressing to me, because it's the off season, right? And I'm like already itching to get out there, but I'm thinking, how can I get out there now? Like, I know it won't be this crazy hunting adventure in the next 2 months, but it makes me just want to do other things, right? I mean, just to have the experience, just to refine things, just to continue to learn my body, to learn gear, to learn whatever. Man, just pumps me up.
I think that's a really important thing for my advice to people. If you're waiting to go backpacking for just hunting reasons, I think you might be giving up the opportunity to get more efficient. There's something that happens when you go, if you just go backpacking to go backpacking, you're no longer worried about chasing animals. You're kind of focused on, is this system working for me? How can I get better at this? So that if you can kind of pare down the backpacking unknowns, and you can, so that when you do go hunting, and your backpack hunting, you can say, oh no, the backpacking's taken care of. I got that down. Let me focus on the hunting, because I'd rather focus on the hunting than the backpacking personally. Yeah. And I was fortunate enough to, on the trail, it was Groundhog's Day, day after day after day, week after week, month after month. And I was able to, hey, I've heard about this technique, let me try this. Oh man, that did not work. Or, hey, actually it did work. That food system worked, or that stove worked, or that I swapped my sleeping bag out for a better sleeping bag. And I learned, I got to feel the difference between 800 fill down and 600 fill down. Massive difference. Wouldn't have known if I didn't go backpacking every week and decide one day to cut my sleeping bag weight by an entire pound and go up in quality of down. You're not going to know that unless you're doing it all the time and feeling the difference from 1 week to the next.
Yeah. I mean, and so many guys are in a position where they get on a backpack hunt once or twice a year. And so, you know, that's okay, 5 trips in 5 years, versus even if you just take a couple days and sneak in 5 weekends, 5 overnighters this year, you just cut literally years of experience in terms of the backpacking side off of the curve.
Yep. Absolutely. Just trial and error. Overnight trips are my favorite, because you can be like, what's there to lose?
Yeah,
if it doesn't work, I can survive. I can mess it up, and I'll just come back out. And then you can stretch it out to say, well, dude, that seemed to work. That system seemed to work overnight. Let me stretch it out to 3 days and see what happens. 5 days. All right, cool. It seems to work.
So one thing we're looking at this year, and I know something we want to talk about with Emery, Steve, was the death hike. And, you know, last year was good, but we're looking at expanding it this year and lengthening it, both in mileage and in length in terms of time. So it's potentially going to be, what, 3 days, 100 miles, Steve, is still the plan?
Yeah, that's the goal. I'm trying to find the route right now, which I think I did find it finally. But yeah, so we're looking at shooting for 100 miles, 3 days, and something in the neighborhood of 20,000 feet of elevation, the route that I found.
That's a good route. That's through hiking right there.
Yeah. you got to do, I think, the biggest thing for everyone. I mean, the death hike traditionally has been, you know, 40 miles, give or take. And you could be, as long as you were in decent shape, you knocked it out and suffered through it. I don't think you can just suffer through 3 days back to back at 33 miles a day.
Yeah.
So whoever is on board this year, I think it's a commitment to, like, I don't know what the training is. I don't know what the protocol is for that. So I definitely want to pick your brain here, Emery, on what you think, you know, after your experience doing the hike, like, how could you build your body up to those kind of tolerances without, you know, you're just not going to be able to go do, you know, crazy long hikes.
Yeah. I mean, everybody has 10 hours a week to train, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I think the lung, you know, making sure you're in cardio shape to do it. But I think the main thing going into that is that when you bumped up from 40 miles to 100 miles, instantly, I think, at least for me, when you say that, my brain goes to, okay, I don't know if I can suffer through 100 miles. I'm right. going to have to actually plan this thing out and say, what's my game plan going into 100 miles? What's that look like? Not just in 3 days, over 3 days, but what does that look like per day or per hour? Mm-hmm. How am I going to break that down into saying, how am I going to manage the marathon versus I can't just come out of the gate swinging. I have
right,
to,
right.
I have to get to my 100-mile mark so that I can get there, and I want to get there. So how do I get there? And for me, it's body management, it's pain management. If your feet are going to, there's certain things that are going to hurt that you can't avoid. Every day on the trail, my feet hurt. That did not go away. So I don't think that you can expect not to be in pain. It's not going to be an amazing 100 miles. You're going to have to work for it. But going into it, I think that you can lessen that pain by, you know, making sure your legs are in shape. I have a problem with my legs cramping if I don't work them out properly. And if I exert them too much, or I'm not feeding my body the right amount of nutrients or salts or whatever they might be, electrolytes, I know that I would maybe battle cramping or tightening of the legs. So I know going into that, I'm like, cool, I need to exercise my legs, make sure they're good to go. And then getting used to that, maybe doing some extra long walks with weight so that your joints feel good. But making sure that you're cardio's in shape and your body's ready to go in tip-top shape as much as it can be, and then you can kind of marathon that thing out and say, mm-hmm. how many miles am I going to do a day, an hour? Because you can roughly guess, I'm assuming 2.5 to 3 miles an hour, that's what you can bet on,
mm-hmm.
depending on the terrain. So break it down hour by hour and just plan on taking those breaks. And really, it's the mental. I think at the end of the day, it's all mental, right?
Right.
Your body is really, really capable. That's one of the things I learned is, even though I was in a miserable state of pain at times, you know, the only thing that gets me through it is me. What made me keep stepping step after step after step? I don't know. It just was this drive to just keep going. And if you can mentally prepare yourself to like, okay, what this might feel like on day two versus day three, I think it's more mental preparation and focus and how you approach it.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, one thing you kind of talked about it earlier was that I instantly looked up, like, you know, Googled how do you hike 30 miles in a day, and it was almost exactly that routine you mentioned of mm-hmm. hike 5-6 miles, rest, get a cat yep. nap, eat,
yeah.
and then just, you know, because in past it was like, okay, how fast can we do yeah. 40 miles? There was no, you know, we very few stops. If we did stop, it was for 5 minutes, you know, hammer down a granola bar and then keep on trucking. So I think, yeah. You said breaking it down, I think, will be a huge factor in getting to the end. Because I know in the years past, there's no way I could have, you know, got up the next day and hiked that again. We just kind of went, you know, swung for the fences for sure.
Yeah. And this is going to be a different thing for everybody that goes is say, cool, how do I approach this thing? And like right. we just talked about, it's how you approach each hour or each day, have a plan. And if you feel good, even if you honestly, I think even if you're feeling good after 2 hours of hiking, take stop. A break, right. just stop, yeah. reload. And man, I lived on like Mio caffeines, those Mio squirt bottle things. You stick them in your water. Oh man, that's the best. Those things, if you need an extra kick, those things are great.
Nice.
Pro tip yeah. right there.
Yeah, pro yeah. tip.
Yeah, it's a whole different animal. Because like this past year on the death hike, when we got to the point where you know, some of us decide to keep going and finish through the night. It was like, that's an easy decision to make when it's just, yeah, I'll be done in another 12 hours or whatever. But
yeah.
when you're talking a 3-day trip and 100 miles, you don't have that point where like, yeah, I'm just going to knock this out. I'm just going to finish. It's a whole different, what was the, whole different mindset.
What was the major struggles you guys had on those death hikes previously? Like, what was the major hit?
You know, the one thing we've always done is, last year we got split up, but the first 2 years it was all about the group. No stragglers left behind. So, you know, I think everyone would have their highs and lows. And so keeping everyone together and keeping up the pace. And I think that was, you know, it was a really cool bonding thing when it was all said and done, because you went through that as a team, and you know, like I said, nobody took off and was 5 miles ahead of the next group. It was all together. Last year, the group was just too big to, that wasn't feasible. Yeah, just too many fitness levels. The second year we did it was just the country, hiking out of the Frank Church Wilderness and all the just lack of trails where we thought there was trails and rattlesnakes left and right. And we had so many issues on that hike. I mean, miles and miles of downfall stuff where, you know, maybe it's only 5 miles, but you probably hiked an extra five because you were zigzagging 20 yards left and right the whole way. So, you know, for me personally, it's always been just pain, managing the pain. We've had heat stroke issues and you know, guys just flat out bonking, you know, just hiking, and all of a sudden they're just literally laying in the trail, you know, just pale face. So kind of the whole gamut, for sure, you know, just lack of hydration and fitness and nutrition. And you definitely learn a lot. Like you said, you learn a lot about your body doing something like that and what you are capable of, and maybe what your boundaries are.
Yeah, it pushes that threshold up, right? So that at least for me, you know, having a, you know, being a military background or whatever, they always push you farther than what you think you can go. And then now you can back it back down. You're like, cool, I've felt this threshold before. I know what bonking might feel like. I know how horrible that can be. I know how terrible X amount of miles can be. And so you can kind of like, hey, 10 miles isn't so bad.
Right. Yeah. It definitely puts it all in perspective for sure.
So it's good to push yourself like that. And you only know when you start pushing.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. With an endeavor like yours, Emery, I mean, I feel it on hard hunts or something like the death hike, and it's been nothing to the level of hiking the PCT. I feel this personal change, change in mindset, change in attitude, a change in just knowing myself from doing something like the adventures that I've done, whether it's a rim to the rim or the Grand Canyon or what have you. So how do you look back at this? And I'm sure you're still processing it, but how do you feel like you've changed personally? Do you see yourself differently? How so? Like, just kind of walk us through some of those thoughts that you've had in kind of the weeks and months since the hike concluded.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. There's, when you go through a crucible of sorts, you come out on the other end and you look back and you're like, wow, I learned something. If I were to look at myself, every once in a while I'll pull open my phone and I'll look at photos of myself at the beginning of the trail, the middle of the trail, and the end of the trail. And somewhere in there, and it could be the growth of my beard, but, you know, under there, but somewhere in there, something shifted in my body or my mind or something. And you can see like this change of like, I'm uncomfortable. I'm not owning this situation. I'm still trying to figure it out to, oh, I think I kind of have a handle on it. I know what this kind of feels like, even though I'm 1,000 to 1,500 miles in, I'm still sorting things out. And then for some reason, right around the Oregon-Washington border, it was like my mind, my body, and everything just like synced up. And I was like, 500 miles to Canada? Psh, whatever. You know, I would stare down the barrel of a 100-mile stretch at the beginning of the trail, and I would be like, 100 miles? I've never even seen 100 miles. I was taking pictures of 100-mile markers and 200-mile markers. And there's something funny when you get to Washington, there's no more markers. There's no more, you've gone this far. It's, duh, you went this far. And so I'd stare down the barrel of 125-mile stretch, and I'm like, cool, whatever. Like, I'll just keep moving. And so it's, I look back on that and I think, I did this thing throughout the summer that seemed almost surreal. And at times it was very surreal, but at the end through Washington, my mental state kind of looked back and I'm looking back, looking south from the border, and I'm like, holy cow, I grew as an individual. I grew to learn a lot about myself. I cleared my brain of all this clutter and stimulation from the outside world. And I'm coming back into the world thinking like, wow, something really happened out there. And I think to your point, I'm going to be digesting this whole thing for a number of years, because it was 5 months total of hiking, 6 months off of work, 5 months of hiking. And I think I'm going to every week, every time I talk about this, I'm like, oh, that was interesting. I think about that. And it helps me looking at those pictures and reading my posts and being like, I definitely changed and I'm more confident in the backcountry. My problem solving skills, I'm more self-reliant. And I think, well, what happens if I'm 20 miles in? I don't know. What happens if you're 20 miles in? You solve the problem, you get out of there. Like, you know, I used to be afraid to be 7 miles in or 5 miles in. And I was talking to someone the other night and they're like, well, what do? You just walk out. Like, you just solve the problem and go with it. And you learn this art of self-reliance. And maybe you had to hitchhike. Maybe you didn't have all the supplies you wish you needed. Maybe you had to try something different and you had to make do and you survived. You were wet. You survived. You were cold. You survived. You're in pain. You survived. And so it's just, does that make sense? Like, you just kind of, you learn this new part of yourself that you're like, cool, I can handle it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that filters a number of things.
Right. Yeah. Just that confidence of whatever's in front of you, you're going to come out the other end alive. Absolutely. Right. Yeah. And usually a better person from it. So it's such a great attitude to carry into life.
Right. Yeah. I would say it translates over to everything, right? Yeah. Like, no matter what the challenge is, it doesn't have to be physical, doesn't have to be outdoors, doesn't have to be hunting, doesn't have to be hiking. You get confidence from doing those things that translate to any challenge you face.
Yeah. And on that note, I'd kick myself if I didn't mention it. If I could look back and take a few lessons away from this mentally, and it transfers to every part of your life, whether you're hunting or just in work. I found myself hiking hills before I was even on them. I would focus on the next day, or I would, you know, oh man, there's a 5 mile hill coming. Oh, look at the elevation gain. Oh my gosh. I know what that feels like. And I was 2 hours, I was 3 hours, or I was 1 day away or 2 days away or 1 week away from this thing that I was just focusing on. And I was beating myself down prior to even getting to that hill. And I had to tell myself, stop doing this, stop looking, stop just, what are you going to do, Emery? Like, are you looking for a reason to quit? Because if you are, that's pretty easy to do. If that's the hill you're wanting to quit on, then just stop now. But if you're planning on hiking over that mountain or going into that drainage or whatever it might be, just go through it. You're going to do it. Stop focusing on it. And then when you get there, hike it and be done with it. Mm-hmm. And it helped me out. It helped me climb hills. Like, I started enjoying, all through Washington, I stopped looking at the elevation gains. I was like, there's no point. I'm going to Canada. So whatever. And I started enjoying the hills, and it would they'd get really bad and I'd start laughing. I'm like, this is ridiculous. I don't know how long it is. And it's either like, man, this is a long hill, or, oh, that wasn't as bad as what I thought it would be. So,
Wow. So speaking of just the climbs, the states, all the places you've been, what are some of the standouts in terms of places? Maybe if somebody said, hey, let's go drop you back off on the PCT, not to hike it, but just to experience this place again. What are some of those places that come to mind?
Surprisingly enough, I was not looking forward to the desert. And being, you know, traveling through the desert regions of Southern California, I was lucky in that it was kind of towards the end of the super bloom, and the desert cactus flowers were going crazy. But I would say those desert sunrises and sunsets, drop yourself off in the middle of, right below the Sierras as you make your way into the Sierras and you get that high desert feel. That was really, really cool. I would say the Sisters Wilderness area in Oregon, very cool, between maybe even Southern Oregon. You spend a few days, you actually spend like 3 or 4 days without seeing a single mountaintop, right past Crater Lake. And you're just in Oregon, lush green forest. You're just in a canopy of trees. That's really cool. And then for me, I think my favorite part, and it might be a bit of a homer, but Northern Washington was amazing. I mean, just the North Cascades and, you know, Mount Rainier, Goat Rocks Wilderness. Goat Rocks is just phenomenal. It's a beautiful wilderness area. There's mountain goats up there. It's an extinct volcano. It's beautiful. You have views of Rainier and everywhere around. But Northern Washington, there's a section on Northern Washington, it's 30 miles, that mile for mile, it has to be some of the most beautiful terrain and classic hiking. You're up above the ridges and you're just like, wow, this is incredible. So those are kind of my favorite spots.
Yeah. So from Southern California to Northern Washington, a lot of places in between.
Yeah. Well, so I did have to go around. I'll have to say I had to go around the Sierra Range due to the snowpack. I made the decision to go around so I could. My goal was to go around and come back. A lot of hikers did that. But by the time I got to Canada, I didn't have time to go back before I had to go back to work.
Right.
And as a thru hiker, you kind of have to balance decision making. I took a lot of hits to the pride on skipping some miles. So I was able to complete roughly 2,000 miles of the 2,600. But the sections I have to go back to complete, they're like the Sierra Range and a little bit of Northern California that are absolutely stunning. My goal was I wanted to do Oregon and Washington, and most of the folks that did the Sierra Range and went through the snow got burnt out by the fires and had to go around. So everyone kind of skipped a section of trail this last year. Very few made it the whole entire thing, but fires kicked up pretty terribly.
Yeah. It was a crazy year for fires out there.
It was really bad.
Yeah. Now they have a bunch going on currently.
Yeah.
So how does this relate to future adventures, future hunts? How do you see things going forward? How has this changed your perspective on just adventure, on hunting, on all the above?
My view of what I thought I needed and what I actually need to go and do these things. I actually went through an exercise and I came home recently. I grabbed the smallest bag I had and I was like, I wonder if I can get everything I need in here for 1 to 3 days. And it was pretty shocking how efficient I've gotten by pulling things out of their little stow bags and finding a way to organize my things where I'm like very efficient with my equipment. So I think now I'm looking forward to taking the things that I've learned in hunting and the things, because you need specific things when you're hunting. You can't get away with being incredibly minimal, where you're just like living on nothing. And then marrying that up with through hiking and seeing, I think that's going to give me a really nice balance of having what I need to haul out weight when I need to, but also being not taking too much. Being very thoughtful about the gear that I have. Would I hike? Would I go hunting in shorts? No, I would not go hunting in shorts. I will bring pants. But maybe I don't need an extra pair of socks like I thought I always did. Maybe I don't need that extra base layer or that extra hat or that extra pair of gloves. I just need a pair of gloves, two pairs of socks, you know, a pair of pants, a base layer, really good layering system, and being good with that and saying, cool. And then, you know, your food bag and being good with food. There's a lot of things that I'll take forward hunting that I learned through hiking and it's going to benefit me really well.
Right. Yeah.
I love how you keep using efficient. You know, it's a term we use a lot at EXO. Just being efficient, and whether that's packing your pack and not using stuff sacks because they waste time and take up space and create weight. Or, you know, we talk about how we design the bags and stuff of getting to a spine scope and a tripod, you know, just efficiently one buckle here or something like that. And I think a lot of people probably look past that, you know, they don't, they're like, oh, what's an extra second here or there. But you know, in the grand scheme of things of a 2000 mile trip, it really adds up. But even so on a 2 to 3 day hunt, I think just maximizing your efficiency and time, you can focus on what you're doing and not mess around with your gear. You know, it's hard to add up the value of that, but that's something we put a lot of importance on for sure.
Well, if you look at the way EXO bags are designed and you compare that to a thru-hiking backpack, man, there's not a whole lot of difference. They're just a little more durable. I mean, you guys have, especially with the roll top and the side pockets and the back stretch pocket, that's a thru-hiking backpack. Mm. I mean, that's what people are using. That is the almost standard on the trail is one big body, side stretch pockets, a stretch pocket on the back, some lashing, roll top, done. Yeah. And it's an incredibly efficient people just love pockets. I went too far on the pockets. Oh my gosh. It was like one of those Russian dolls. Like, yeah. You just keep pulling. There's pockets inside of pockets, and I overdid it. And I had to return the bag. I'm like, I think I peaked.
Pockets with dividers inside.
The pockets couldn't shut because I had other pockets inside. And I'm like, okay, I'm losing stuff here. And it was just so inefficient. But it sounds so cool because you're organized. But you can organize it now. If you look at my backpack from top to bottom to top, sleeping bag in the bottom, an accessory bag right above that has like my right around my sleeping pad and like maybe some extra bits and pieces to charge my phone. And on top of that is my food bag. And on top of that is layers. And my food bag is a food bag. It's just a bag with food in it that I pull from. Hmm. And then like it's a roll top ditty bag. And I stuff that in the bottom and I pull snacks out that I'm going to eat during the day. So I'm not digging and making a bunch of noise and rustling with my backpack. So when I open the top of my bag, I have maybe like a puffy jacket and snacks, like a little baggie full of snacks that I'm going to eat during that day. And that's it. That's the only thing I pull out.
That's awesome. I was actually just looking when we were talking earlier, and I can fit 12 double stuffed Oreos in an Exo side hip belt pouch. So that's going to be super convenient just to like quick draw holster. I mean, that's 12 miles right there.
It's 12 miles. Yeah.
That's super efficient.
Don't discount sour gummy worms either.
Oh, dude.
Keep them in a hip pouch.
Yeah. Gummy and sour is ball game. That's the way to do it. That's funny. Emery, this has been awesome. You have some great content on your site in terms of write-ups from your experience on the PCT, photos from the trip, as well as awesome content from before you even went on this adventure, and then also the new podcast. So point our listeners to how they can check out your site, maybe follow you on social media, get in contact with you if they have any questions and all that stuff.
Yeah, I can be found at byland.co. And then you can find me on Instagram on there. You can email me. The podcast is, you can just search under iTunes or Podbean or whatever, wherever you get your podcast from, the Byland Podcast. And it covers hunting, backpacking, anything that might help you in the backcountry or backpacking in general. And then Instagram, I'm mostly on Instagram. I have a Facebook deal, but that's just too confusing. Instagram is so quick and easy. So by_land, and you can hit me up on there, but if anything, byland.co.
Perfect. So let's do this again next year. You'll have some more hunts under your belt since you'll be around for season next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks for coming on, man.
Well, that's a wrap on this episode. Once again, guys, to learn more about what Emery's up to with Byland, to check out his podcast, the articles that he's written, or to read more about his experience with the PCT, head over to his website, byland.co, and check all of that out. As always, if you are enjoying the show, we would love to see a review from you on iTunes. That helps us tremendously. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, go ahead and contact us directly. Just shoot us an email to podcast@exomountaingear.com.